All right. I'm going to call roll call, and then Glenn is willing to serve as chair for this meeting, but we do need to hold an election or a nomination. We have to have a motion for it. All right. David Aguayo, Angela Bozo, Kathleen Detman,
Present.
Elizabeth Doyle, Judy Kurofsky, Glenn Craig.
Here.
Aureliano Montes is coming. Stephen Peters,
Here.
Mark Richardson,
Here.
Jim Ring, Eric Rotier,
Here.
Kevin Scheibler,
Here.
and Mike Riviere.
Here.
All right. So Mike and Kathleen, I'm going to note it in the minutes, are attending by teleconference.
Oh yeah, so I'll move that Glenn Craig be interim or de facto. Which way should we say it?
Interim sounds good.
All right, interim chair for this meeting.
Okay.
And that was you, Steve?
Yes.
Okay. So Mark and Steve.
All in
Okay,
favor?
all in
Any
favor?
objections?
Okay.
All in favor?
Anonymous voice said, all in favor. Any further discussions? All right. Is that good enough for the?
That seems good enough.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you. So let's move on to the minutes, and which were presented in everyone's packet. Any questions on the minutes or motions?
Approval.
Stephen moves approval. Or Kevin second. Any further discussions? All in favor? Aye. Minutes are approved.
Aye.
Thank you. Minutes are approved. Public comment?
None.
None registered. Thank you. Disclosures and recusals. I will start with my City of Madison Room Tax Commission. Commissioner? Anybody else?
I am a member of the board of directors for Destination Madison, and through my employment, I help manage the Brookfield Conference Center.
Brookfield, fantastic. Mike's on the phone.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Glenn. I continue to serve on the City Room Tax Commission and the Military Booking Event Assistance Advisory Committee.
All right, so that's Eric and Mike. Everybody else good? All right. Thank you. Right to the presentations. We have a guest today. Emily, you want to go right into, come on. Emily DeVore, correct?
Yep, Emily DeVore.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you guys for about 15 minutes
Why don't you
today.
introduce your role, and we were
For
talking.
sure, well,
Okay.
yep.
Okay.
The first
Yeah.
slide. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Jump in the
But it's just, ooh, there we go. There's my giant
There
face.
she is.
Okay, so this is standard template. I'm Emily DeVore. I'm the Director of Placemaking and Economic Development with Downtown Madison Inc. and Destination Madison. I have had this role. The role has been in existence since November, so it's pretty new. And it's the first joint position between these organizations, kind of creating a bridge between the two. My background is in interior architecture, design research, placemaking transformations. I did the Lakefront Porch Park down on East Wilson Street for the last 5 years with tremendous help from Mike Revere, who's on the phone, and sustainable urban development. So that's my background prior to this role. And I'll go through the table of contents here. The end is kind of where we get to more about the role, but first I wanted to start with a little bit of background on placemaking, since not everyone is fully aware of kind of the history of that term, and it's also used, I think it's pretty trendy now, so a lot of people are using it in a pretty broad context. And then I'm going to go into our 2025 priorities for placemaking with DMI and Destination Madison and how that ties to you all here at Moon Terrace. So, background on placemaking. It is talked about, I think, in the common realm more now, but it actually goes back to some ideas in like the 60s. So these two people, Jane Jacobs and William H. White, were some pioneering folks in the urban realm that really focused their work around human-centered public spaces in an era following really modernist design that was pretty sterile and focused on form rather than on people and how it actually functioned for people. And Fred Kent was actually a research assistant for William H. White and saw all these ideas and sort of took them and formed this organization called Project for Public Spaces, and eventually kind of coined the term placemaking in the 90s for their process that they developed for transformative public space improvements based in the ideas that these two kind of grounded in the 60s. So that same organization, Project for Public Spaces, has a pretty good succinct definition of placemaking, in my opinion, and they talk about how it's both an idea and a hands-on approach or process. And it can work at different scales, the neighborhood, the city, the region, and it's all about collectively reimagining public spaces as the heart of the community. And so I think when I think of with placemaking and kind of the resources you'll find online, I think the common core elements that make it placemaking as opposed to maybe, you know, development or architectural process is that it's grounded in this collective reimagination. So it's really not meant to be top down. It is grassroots bottom up. It's human centered, kind of like I was talking about the history of it. And it's meant to create places for the well-being of people. And to do that successfully, it really needs to be grounded in data and observation. So one of their key things was going out and looking at how a space actually is working and piloting different things to see how different transformations might affect the situation, and then continuing to go back and make reevaluations over time as things change. Sense of place is a big one, and it kind of pertains to the idea that there is space and there is place. And a space is kind of any physical location, whereas a place is when people can tie an identity to it because it is really rooted in its locale and the people and the culture that are very specific to that place. And so it's all about connecting people in an emotional way to the physical environment. And lastly, a big part of it is empowering people to care for their public spaces. So by getting them along in the process, not only are you helping them be a part of the reimagination process, but hopefully continuing to care for it in programming, maintenance, operations, and continued care for a long time, because it's not just done when you implement something physical on a site. There has to be continued work. So the value, I think there's many pieces that are valuable to this process. So one of the original ideas is that it is holistic and interdisciplinary. So instead of approaching it from one angle, it's really trying to think of every single piece of the puzzle that affects a place, everything from the seating to the social aspects to the access to the space, just everything that could affect it. It generally, because of the nature of the process I'm describing, does result in more activated, inclusive, and vibrant public realm because it's so dated in the, or so grounded in these data and observations. A big thing is combating social isolation and building community. So not only in the kind of, I don't want to say end product, but in the physical space itself, but in the process, there's a lot of community building that can happen there. Strengthening a sense of belonging and empowerment. Again, I think that comes a lot through the process. If you can really show people what they can do in their community and bring them into the process, they have a better sense of belonging, and it helps with empowerment. The nature of the principles of placemaking really revolve around health. So it's going against this kind of car-centric notion that we really were focused on a century ago, and goes more towards pedestrians and biking, and that naturally kind of ties to health, as do a lot of other pieces of the puzzle with placemaking. Resilience kind of comes from that social connection and community that's built with the process and how people can withstand emergencies when they have someone that they can rely on nearby. Sense of safety, I think, is important and can come from including as many people as are touched by the space and people who are not currently using the space or may not have access to it. And thinking and looking at how they see the space. There's a lot of research around, for example, if you, the more women you see at a space, the generally the better sense of safety it is. There's just a different dynamic in the places that women are feeling comfortable than men, for example. Boosting economic development, a huge part of my role. If you can create a great public space, you're going to get more visitors. And if you can create more pedestrian traffic, you're probably going to have more of those spontaneous business transactions happening. Or if there's a park that's a really great park that's drawing people, then those people are probably going to go get something to eat afterwards, for example. And the last one is supporting environmental goals for a lot of the reasons I've already outlined. Things are really based around people and the environment rather than kind of our manufactured world. So with that background, our 2025 priorities for placemaking within the two organizations, broadly speaking, I'll just say I view my role, and I think Ellie and Jason would agree, but just kind of an overview is that it's a role that is meant to have a very holistic view on how we can continue to maintain and build an even more inclusive and vibrant public realm in Madison, which means streets and parks and kind of that whole fabric in between everything else. And especially important right now because we're growing so much, right? There's so much development happening. And so we really need to be intentional about how that all gets pieced together. And all of that is to ensure an inviting destination, a really thriving local economy, and quality of life for residents. And I think I will say too, an interesting part about my position being between these two organizations is that it is building great collaboration between the two. They already had a lot, but obviously there's even more now. And it's also interesting because it's kind of unique for these type of destinations or these type of organizations to have this topic area in-house. And the fact that they're both like member and partner organization means that we can be a voice for businesses and a voice for the hospitality businesses and like help promote that kind of grassroots change by their voices that placemaking is based on. So specifically our initiatives, with Destination Madison, it's a research-based year right now. So we're redoing our organizational strategic plan this year, and it'll begin next year. And I'm currently doing research in three areas. Visitor center, we have a inkling, I suppose, that there could be a lot of value in Madison having kind of like a regional visitor information center in town. But we want to ground that decision in a lot of research, understand what the kind of investment might, I don't want to say return on investment because it is kind of hard to quantify it in monetary terms, but just what the value of that might be. And the next one is neighborhood storytelling. So we are hoping to kind of go into neighborhoods and talk to them to understand what they feel like their pocket of the city is known for. What are the great unique attributes? What's the vibe? And then be able to tell that story on our platforms. So we don't want to be defining neighborhoods by any means, but we do want to help tell those stories because from a visitor's perspective, the more that we can tell those stories, the more people know Madison as this place that has all kinds of different things for them. And hopefully that means that they will go further out than just the capital or the university. They'll stay here longer, etc. And then the destination brand is probably our biggest kind of inspirational undertaking. We, you know, some think like Music City Nashville or Surf City USA. There's these places that have kind of shorter slogans that the world can latch onto in terms of what they bring that is unique. It doesn't necessarily encompass everything they have to offer, but it does promote something that people can attach to. And we think that that would be really valuable in Madison, but we also will only be doing that in a very collective communal way. And we understand that if we were to do this, success would look like everyone buying in, all the stakeholders, the businesses, the residents. We would want something that people would look at and be like, that's us. That's Madison. So all of these things right now are really at the beginning stage. I'm doing research, reaching out to different cities throughout the country, online research, trends, articles around what we might want to do and what the value of these would be. And then it'll progress into kind of community research, going out and talking to business associations, neighborhood associations, all of that, resulting at the end of the year in an outline for each of these areas that will help us understand where we're going in our strategic plan that will be the next 3 years. Downtown Madison, Inc. I think, Jason, I was here when a few times ago Jason presented on this, so I think you all know there's not probably too much more I could say about that, but again, it's just this great project that we are working on. It's a public-private partnership between Downtown Madison, Inc., the city, and other downtown stakeholders to really intentionally move forward. So creating a vision for the next 15 or so years of Madison as we grow, what do we want to be? And it's really grounded in an economic analysis. So the city's doing a full city economic plan right now, but this would be really focused in on the downtown area. The Regent Street Vision, I don't know how many of you saw the paper earlier this week, and we had an event on Tuesday, DMI morning breakfast about it, but there is, you know, a decade of work of stakeholders on the street kind of taking the city neighborhood plan and trying to turn that into a more creative and explicit vision of what that street could be as it gets developed more. And right now, I think the most you know, the city is in agreement with it now. So we're moving things forward. The city kind of, we're working with the city more closely now than ever before. And DMI has created a business association on Regent Street for the first time ever. And they had a meeting, their first meeting about a month ago. And I think the biggest kind of immediate output for these things is the road work that's going to happen on Regent Street. And so that was meant to be this year. It has now been pushed back to likely 2028, but the city is still hiring someone hopefully this year to start the design process. And so we're really trying to coordinate that business association and like a timeline alignment so that all of those stakeholders on the street can have a say in the design process of the road. And also that it's really setting us up for success to follow this vision of the street so that we're not developing in a way that restricts what we all ideally want the street to be. And last is Mifflin Plaza. That one, I think most of you probably are well aware of since it's right on the square here next to the Wisconsin Historical Society's new museum. It's just kind of the public space outside of that. And it was already a public space, city owned. I lost my train of thought for a second. It is, the city has had a couple of public meetings about it, and we're hoping to work with the city in a public-private partnership for this process to kind of have all the voices of all the businesses around there heard in this process, because it is such a high-profile space. We have a really cool opportunity right there, just given the identity of that area with so many civic and cultural institutions, with the Capitol and the museums and the library and Overture. That space has a really cool identity already. And there, it's going to impact so many people. It's one of our most visited places. There's a lot of businesses around it. So we really just feel like we want to create a good working team between the city and private stakeholders. And this is the last one. So I just wanted to wrap up by saying that was a lot, and it's a breadth of things, not all of which obviously pertain specifically to you all, but especially not maybe in group business, but I know you all have the leisure side with the cafe and the architectural tours. And so kind of this idea of driving more activation in our public realm would help those. And I also think, really broadly speaking, placemaking and making our public realm, which is a huge part of what visitors experience when they're here, is so important in making people have a great experience when they're here. But also, hopefully, like I said, the things we're working on are going to keep people here longer, which means that they're staying in hotels longer, which means that we all get paid. So, and that was all I had. Do you all have any questions?
I got a question. So it's kind of, I mean, like you said, some points it feels concrete, at other points it feels abstract, right? So can you maybe tell us, name a city that's really doing a nice job with this that we might know, or an example of a city or a town or a state that is really doing good work?
Do you mean with placemaking in general?
Yeah. Like if you've been to X, that's a good example of.
Wow. That is a good question. There's so many examples and so many things that can tie into placemaking, but like holistically. Wow.
Put a pin in it.
Maybe. I mean, I can give you like project examples of
Yeah.
things that are that work really well. I mean, wow. Can I use like front porch as an example
Yeah.
of what placemaking is?
Yeah.
So like that, I was a resident of the neighborhood when I started that. And that came from me walking around and being like, man, there's not a lot of greenery in my neighborhood. There's not a lot of places for me to gather with my neighbors. I really want to make a change. I went to CNI, Capital Neighborhoods Inc., and I was like, how? And they were like, hey, there's this Madison neighborhood grant that could kickstart some funding for you. And they helped me apply to that. And from there, we s used the resources from CNI to send postcards to the entire neighborhood and to advertise online. And they connected me to Jason, who posted it on DMI's resources, right? And you're like really trying to spread and get all of the community behind it. And ultimately, the community was like so behind it and had so many ideas for the space that we were like, wow, what if we tried fundraising more money and ended up with a $500,000 project because we started small and had conversations and really tried to understand. I didn't go in being like, I think this space should be this. I just said, I think there's a need here. Do people agree? And then we collectively decided what the need was and built relationships and support for that need. And then the resources followed that. Because we could tell the story of how many people were supporting it. But also, I could send you examples of placemaking
Well,
if
no,
I
that's a
have
good
some more
example.
time
It's
to
just,
think about it.
and public art, I would imagine, is
For sure.
a big part of,
For sure.
because that's another place where I think this organization and this facility, right,
Yeah.
could intersect with that effort.
Tell me more about that.
Well,
Intersect how?
what we've been talking about, just Monona Terrace being part of or a venue for public art and
Yes.
Mike Brevere's on the phone, so he could probably talk a little bit more about it. But that's something that, we've long thought could be more prominent in and around here, right? And I know there's efforts underway, and I just wondered whether that's something that could be a thread that binds.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you do Dane dances here too. I think it's about building this sense of place around, and a lot of that can come through the types of activities you have and the type of art that is in a space. Anything that's making, that's drawing people to a space, making it so that there's a sense of identity to it specifically. I mean, Monona Terrace is already so iconic in its architectural form. People know it, but like, how do you make that architectural form something that people think about in a human way? Like, what's happening here on a human scale? If you can start to like make your identity around, like, oh, Monona Terrace is the place where I can go and see a rotating art collection of people in Madison, or, like, how do you start to build that more human-centered identity is potentially. Yeah.
Is it okay if I ask a question?
Please do,
Okay, so
Katie.
yeah, I think if Alder Revere were here, he would bring this up. But you knew that Fred Kent had a relationship with former Mayor Paul Sondland, right?
I didn't.
It's worth looking into. I think he's come to Madison on a couple of occasions, and because placemaking was a big deal, big thing for Paul Sondland when he was mayor, and he used to say something faster, cheaper, and it was like it doesn't have to be a big building or things
Yes.
like that. And with how do we encourage
Lighter,
this? Like
quicker,
almost,
cheaper.
yeah. What, say it again?
Lighter, quicker, cheaper.
So there's a relationship between Fred Kent and Madison, and Alder Revere always remembers things much better than I do. But it's
Absolutely.
yeah,
That's
it's an
great.
interesting connection.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look into that. And it did make me think of like, I mean, Madison's doing a great job of this, right? We have the new like art tax or something that funded the stencil murals on that new Atwood portion of the bike trail, right? So stuff like that, right? Like that's a lower barrier implementation rather than like fully redoing a space. It's like that's public art
that's something where you're already like, that's why this Regent Street road reconstruction is so important, right? Like, we're already doing the work to tear everything up. Let's make sure that we put it back in a way that is really artistic and human scaled and makes it fun to be there as a person, not just a car.
I think it was St. Paul that did this, and I'm sure all serious players will like shudder at the thought of this, but they took donated pianos and they had local artists like paint them and make them kind of fun, and then they were strategically placed throughout the city and like people could engage and just kind of play around, and sometimes you would get like a really great player who would just kind of start playing in the middle of an area. And so I don't know how, it's been years since we've been up there and seen that, but so I don't know long-term stability, but you know, it's just those cool kind of little pop-up things that get very interactive and engaging.
Yeah, for sure.
We still have the piano. Once that's outside the convention center, we're not there for me. So
there you go.
People still stop and play and people gather.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
Exactly.
It's really cool.
Anything else for Emily? Two great organizations.
Yeah.
You go to twice as many management meetings? No.
A lot of meetings. Thank you so much for
Thank
having
you so
me.
Much.
If you have any questions, feel free to reach out always.
All right. We have a new staff member to be introduced. And Bill, are you going to do that for us?
I'm pinch hitting. Connie's out sick today.
All right,
so I have the high honor and privilege of introducing the new manager of maintenance, our maintenance department, Jeff Block.
Hello.
And there he is. And we're excited about Jeff. He has marvelous credentials. And, you know, please take it away.
Jeff Block. Yeah. I live in DeForest. I worked for DeForest Area School District for 13 years. Actually, I want to say first, that's a hard presentation to follow. Please don't come with a hard question. So did worked for DeForest Area Schools for 13 years. My son hit that point of seventh grade where it's kind of odd to have your dad as the maintenance manager there. And just wanted to try something new. So as soon as I heard the opportunity for a Frank Lloyd Wright building was coming open, it was pretty amazing. It's one of my favorite, as I keep saying one of, it actually is my favorite building in all of Madison. Just it's got so much history and the Frank Lloyd Wright, late note on all that. I applied for it, got the job, and here I am. I wasn't planning on leaving, but enjoying every minute of it. Day four so far. We're hitting the ground running. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, Jeff. All right. Next item, 87552, nominating committee recommendation of slate of officers for vote in April. Stephen.
You may notice there's not actually a slate for you to look at the moment. The nominating committee is still working on it. We have some bumps in the road, so we're kind of, we'll be continuing to meet and we'll have to probably get the slate, proposed slate to you before the meeting in April, but you'll have something.
So apparently there's a vote in April, so we got
yes.
we have time.
We got a month, we're fine.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. Thank you. Bill, a booking pace update?
Indeed. In terms of you know, where we stand, we're pretty much right on with revenue. We were a little overspent with expenses, and Jeff will talk to you about that. The projected pace hasn't moved appreciably, but I think we're still in a good spot. And once we get a few of our larger events under the belt that really generate the revenue, we're going to be in good shape. So we budgeted 170 banquets. Right now, I'd put us at about 158. We budgeted 134 meetings. I'd put us at about 115. For conventions, we budgeted 21, and we have 24 signed contracts. And for conferences, we budgeted 26, and right now we have 24 signed contracts, and we're working with another group, so that would put us at 25. So when you lump the two together, as I like to do sometimes, we budgeted 47 conventions and conferences, and right now we have 48 signed contracts, and hopefully 49, and maybe we can even get another conference or two that books in the year for the year. So I think that's it for the booking pace. You know, the financial numbers, you know, the way we model this puts us down about 10%, but that's not where we're going to finish. You know, once we get these events in and spend the money, we'll be in good shape. I think that's what I
have. So you're feeling good about the overall?
We are. I don't know if we'll come in a, you know, $500,000 over budget like we did last year in terms of, you know, when everything's said and done, but I think we're going to be in good shape.
Very good. Any questions for Bill? He's only going to be here a couple of months.
That's right. So be nice.
So shouldn't we be counting on these projections? Really?
Yeah.
I think it's real. I think it's going to be good.
He's like, yeah, we're going to be good.
Yeah.
Right. I have a question. Has the addition of the embassy suites helped us reach out to some groups that maybe we didn't have enough attached hotel rooms or nearby hotel rooms in the past?
I think, from my perspective, yes. I think Ellie and Jamie were they here last month. I think they would, I think, enthusiastically say that it's been helpful. They've been an active, my understanding is they've been an active player in offering room blocks. And that they're, you know, they're right in the mix with other properties in terms of, you know, the rates that they're offering. And so I think Destination Madison has found it quite helpful when they're bidding on larger, you know, conventions or conferences.
Do you have a feel for their occupancy rate? Can you?
I had a conversation with some of their representatives from Apple Reed, the owners, and I know it was off to a slow start, but it's not uncommon for year one. So.
It's a nice looking property.
Yeah, sure. It is.
All right. Any other questions for Bill? Thank you, Bill. Finance report, Jeff.
Thank you. So, like Bill said, you know, we're only 2 months in. We've had one convention so far this year, and it's one of the smaller ones that we typically do. It's like a gymnastics event that doesn't do a huge amount in catering, doesn't do a huge amount of AV. So most of their stuff came from room rental. The other conventions that we still have on the books are the ones that have a nice mix of room rental, AV, and hopefully for catering sake, a lot of money as well spending on food. So far, we're about $45,000 over budget right now. Most of that, if I look back between the first 2 months, there was the $33,000 VEBA payment, which I explained last month is the retirement fee that we pay to the city for employees that are in the local employee association. They have a benefit that is $5,000 a year for their first 10 years in retirement. The city hits us up for our share every year in January. So that's a $33,000 expense and benefits that we don't get a chance to budget for. Our hourly expenses have been a little bit higher. So additionally, the hourly benefits have been higher as well. We have saved a lot of money, not in a great way, because we've got a bunch of open positions from the permanent salary standpoint. But with Jeff starting, with hopefully getting an AV manager, that might be jumping into the director's report a little bit. But with the AV manager and some of the other positions that we're getting hired soon, hopefully that will get people in that can hit the ground running and maybe reduce some of our stagehand and hourly usage, because we're using a ton of it right now. Just to help out until we get those permanent staff positions filled. So like Bill said, you know, with the conventions that we still have on the books, which for the next 10 months, there's 25 or 26 of them. If they average anywhere close to the $82,000 that they did last year, we're going to be just fine. And don't worry, I'm holding Bill accountable, even though he is.
Right.
So I'm double checking his numbers. I promised that I'd let you guys know if there was anything that dramatically changed for December. The only other invoice that we processed actually after I reported on stuff in March or on February 20th was like a $3,500 invoice. So it didn't move the needle dramatically. Our end of the year is right around $400,000 to the good, pending all of the year-end entries that the city makes. But overall, December and 2024 as a whole, very nice. End of report.
Very good. Questions for Jeff. I was going to ask you that question. You answered. You knew it was coming.
I've been around long enough now.
Yeah. Anybody else for Jeff? All right. Thank you. We've moved on to the director's report. That must be Bill.
Well, I think what I'll mention is we are recruiting for an AV manager. That recruitment closed on the 17th of this month. We had a really good response. Low 60s, I think, for applicants, which is lately unprecedented, really, you know, for a Comp Group 18, you know, a little bit higher level position. So we're really pleased about that. So now HR has to sort through and determine who they will advance for us to do interviews with. The recruitment to fill my position will close on the 31st of this month. And we haven't had any reports in terms of how the applications are going at this point. So that's a little update on those two positions. In terms of the director's report, you know, of course, if there's any questions, some of this information didn't come out of my areas, so I may be not able to answer, but we'll certainly get you an answer if there's a question. And one kind of fun thing I will point out is the Community Relations Department for the last few years has been doing a family winter prom. And so it's families, moms, dads with kids, it's kids with their grownups, with whoever, you know, might bring them to an event like this. But we had 503 attendees. We price it so anybody hopefully could make it. It's $5 a family. They did fancy lighting. They had a DJ. They had cupcakes. They had treats for that. It was included in the $5 fee. And so it was from 5:30 to 8:30 on Saturday, February 1st. And so it's, you know, we're really happy with the turnout and the grown-ups and the kids having such a blast is rewarding, especially for the Community Relations Department. And they've been trying some innovative things. They've started a program called Lakeside Dance Lab, and we get somebody who is knowledgeable in a certain style of dance, and we put it out there with music. And again, we do a lovely stage, we do lighting, and we had a on the 6th, we had attendance of 258 people doing line dances featuring Francis Medrano. And I think Francis does some line dancing for the summer concerts. He gets the attendees up and moving and having a good time. And then we had the bachata.
Yeah,
got it right. Bachata fusion. With Luis, and I don't know that I can pronounce his last name, but he's marvelous. And we had about 135 or 140 people show up for that one on February 20th. So, I think they're being innovative. They're trying some things. These are well within our wheelhouse. And I think, we have a group of followers that have a lot of trust in the programs that our Community Relations Department puts on, where they're willing to give us a chance. They're willing to show up for some of these things. And when they do, they really seem to have a good time. There's some new merchandise in the gift shop. You can see that, some welcome mats and some ornaments. I think that's what I would pull out of this at the moment.
Questions for the acting director?
Sure. I noticed some leaks in the famous elevator.
Right.
Elevator.
Yeah, I'm not.
Also known as a sauna.
Yeah, I'm not super up on that. Do you know what's going on with that?
I know, God, you would know.
I know that they're trying to find a vendor to fix the problem. They put sandbags down to prevent the... It's when the snow melts or it rains really hard that this happens, and then they have to shut down the elevator because otherwise it'll fry the circuits. So, they put some sandbags down to kind of prevent that water from getting into where it starts leaking. Yeah. And we'll hope they have it fixed.
It's a very handy elevator, but it's quite got a lot of issues.
And we're sensitive to how important it is to the bicycle community, so we do everything we can to keep that thing moving. And when it isn't, we really... again, try very hard to communicate with the community so they know what to expect when they come on their commute downtown or whatever, whatever they're doing. But if those electronics get wet, they're very expensive to replace. So we're really trying hard so that doesn't happen.
And introduce Jeff to that device.
I looked over there.
Oh, you're like, oh, so. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Anything else? I think on operations, I think we've reached quite a time to adjourn, and unless there's any other comments.
Mike, you still
anybody
there?
Anybody on the mic or?
I'm here, but I don't want to put Bill on the spot with any question.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Glenn.
All right, and Kathleen, thank you for being here.
I know I was a little late getting here, but I don't know. Just to share my news, I'll be moving at the end of the month, so I can no longer serve in the county board appointed role. Oh. So, you know, Connie asked if I was interested in serving in any other role. So it sounds like there might be an opportunity for me to pop back in the future. But for now, this will be my last meeting. So,
well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure serving with everyone.
Thank you for serving.
Not that easy. Yeah. I know. Well, are you moving out of the county? Like, where exactly are you going? I'm like, not too far. So, yeah.
Anyone else? Motion to adjourn? Anyone?
So moved.
Who did? I missed that. Wilson. Yeah, that makes sense. And then who seconded it? It was you, Eric?
Yep. Eric. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you all. Nice to see you. Spring break and cold viruses, I think.
I know. That's where I was like, I felt bad. Like, even people are kind of dragging me. You know, like, oh, it's so time. Am I leaving soon? Well,
yeah. You get run down.
So if I want to extend the recommendation, he's already in there.
I know. I was
a guy that I
had to go on a conference
that I know in that whole stuff.
Yeah, just to kind of leverage
So, like, he's,
I love it, but
we just got back from DC, did a lot of work in DC, but you know, I want to make sure it's well,
how does that work?
I was at HR,
so I've got a colleague that applied for the vacancy answer. He's already in the mix. I just want to make sure that whoever's doing the sorting,
Chicago
email to them. Yeah. So that's
I hear you. Last year was Minneapolis. And
Why don't we go see the TV man?
A couple years ago, we were in Indianapolis.
The analyst that exactly. Working with
him. Okay.
Supervisor.
Johnny Davis.
So yeah, I'll send it to you guys, right? I'll meet each other and then you would forward it on. His name is Brian Lislow.
They don't want it. It's so funny. They changed their shots. That's all I always know.
If he's already implied, I want you to know his name.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Those guys.
All right.
I'll see you.
Hello.
Hi, Gavin.
How are you doing? Good. How are you?